9:30 on a Monday morning, and an opportunity to welcome in City Manager Ed Gordon, members of the staff of the City of Bartlesville. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. How was your weekend?
It was nice. It was a great day weather-wise.
84 degrees on Saturday. I broke sweat.
There you go.
I did on Saturday out working on the brush hog.
Uh-huh.
So it was a little sweaty. A delightful day.
It was a delightful day. Sunday was pleasant as well.
Good church service and enjoyed Sunday. I'm glad to be at work here on Monday. I've been off for a week. I'm not sure what's happened. It's kind of like having to retrain me. They had to lead me to where my office is.
Well, the Potters made an announcement of a new acquisition last week, and we got received word of a nomination, at least being a finalist for a Crystal Award. So a few things going on.
Well deserved, I might add. The leaven of our community is permeated by the radio stations, plural, here in town, and is muchly appreciated all the work that you all do. Here in the as a radio family,
not just
the Potter family, but to you all as a radio family, I've come to rely heavily on you all for the information. You all sound like I'm from Oklahoma.
Well, I think you are.
Yeah, that's right. 66 college high graduate, by the way. I just mentioned that.
Yeah,
that was the right school.
Oh, okay.
And I think there should be an effort to rename the school again back to college high. Bartlesville High School just kind of lacks.
Do you know any of the city council members?
School board members? Yeah. I know two or three.
Well, then make your proposal and see what happens.
I think we should work toward that end. Charlie, we got a city council meeting tonight at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
I think we will begin that with, as I recall, a BEA meeting. But we have a city council meeting this evening at 7 o'clock. A couple of interesting items on the agenda will be the Johnstone Park Pavilion.
Mm-hmm.
That's being constructed with CDBG money or Community Development Block Grant money that fits certain census tracts in the community. And it's going to be a wonderful addition on the corner of Cherokee and Hensley. Is that First Street? Almost call it First Street there, John.
It's back First Street that's separate from Hensley.
Okay. So somewhere down there.
Yeah.
Thank you for that description.
So the name of the street officially is Hensley. So
yes, right there on the northwest corner will be a pavilion. It will be publicly available. It's kind of the vision is, Charlie, to build a new farmer's market there.
Mm-hmm.
The council will take action on that tonight to award that particular bid. As I recall, I think it's Lucas Metal is the one that's providing the building. Another company is providing the construction, but there's some elevations that it's going to be a beautiful facility and really looking forward to LED lights. It's going to be a wonderful addition. Concrete sidewalks around it. So the council will take action on that this evening to award that.
Can you give a more precise location of that pavilion? It will not be at the intersection per se.
No, it will be on the property that is on the northwest corner of Cherokee and Hensley.
Okay.
So when you drive up to the intersection, right now it's a vacant lot. I think the Y on part of it has a parking lot on the west half of it, and then small parking lot, and then the other is just a parkland. But that pavilion will be built there, and it will be a wonderful addition to our community. And again, as a community, we've received community development block grants over the years that have been used in the census tracts that are eligible. And I think we've received several millions of dollars. Our esteemed treasurer is here. He just got a blank look when I said that. Because he thinks that I'm going to ask him about
it. He was here.
D, all the above. we've been very successful in that, in partnering up. And, of course, city has to match that dollar for dollar. And the city council sets that as a policy, and we pursue those grants, and they approve them. We have public hearings. In fact, in relationship to that, on number 9 on the agenda is a public hearing for modification of this project. And so that'll be a good event that's going to take place tonight. Also, in Ward 4, we received 6 applications. Charlie, I brought those with me, but I'm not going to read all 6 of them.
I have had the opportunity to look at those applications. They were provided through a Freedom of Information request, and so on.
FOIA.
Yeah.
And we will, the City Council will formally receive those applications and review those applications. I think they're, as I look at the agenda item, I believe that the first meeting in March, which is the 7th of March, is the evening in which they will, a difficult process, and that I'm glad that I don't, there's six good applications there, and the council will select one of those. Only one can get that seat, and they will select one of those six. And then the first meeting in March, they'll appoint that individual to the City Council, and they'll be sworn in that night and take up representing Ward 4.
For the unsuccessful applicants, wouldn't it be nice if all five of the unsuccessful applicants also ran for that post when it comes up for election in November?
I think it'd be just splendid. I do. I'm impressed that we've got citizens that are interested in representing their community, and it is a thankless job. It pays well, though. $10 a meeting.
There you go.
To a maximum of $40 a month. So obviously, it's a volunteer position. I'm being sarcastic. It's interesting. We have a good city council and well represented. Well, I have with me this morning, Charlie. I have Mr. Mike Bailey.
Good morning.
Morning, Mike. And a couple of things. I'm just going to, this is not a part of our, he and I have already kind of done a small rehearsal of this, but I'm just going to throw him a loop.
Okay.
I love those. Those are my favorites.
I can tell you're
I'm preparing to make something up, so
okay.
Shoot.
All right, Lisa, Mike. Almost slipped there, Chief.
could have called me Terry too. So that would work.
Understandable.
It would be. Our state is in the midst of budget woes.
That significant.
Is, they're trying to, and I'm glad I'm not in Earl Sears, Representative Sears' shoes, or John Ford or Travis Dunlap, as they try and come up with over $1 billion to balance the state budget. Charlie.
1.3.
Thank you for that, and. There's a couple of places where relief could be found fairly immediately because as a city, we have wrestled with this very subject for quite some time.
That's true. We've had similar issues. Thankfully, not $1 billion.
No, but it's an economy of scale, and when we dropped over 10% here several years ago in 1 year,
that's right.
Budget, it crippled us as a city. To operate.
And of course, ours is primarily related to sales tax, which is also a revenue source at the state of Oklahoma.
And hence my thought to you, just as we think out loud, online sales tax. Mike, we've done some research on that internally. And what do we estimate that we're losing a year to online sales tax?
Well, it's over $1 million now is what we estimate we're losing. So it is obviously a significant hit to the city of Bartlesville. You can extrapolate that out to the state. It's for the state, who knows, but I would imagine that we're talking $500 million based on that study that we used to generate Bartlesville's gap as well.
And it really, and people would say, well, it would be a brand new tax. Well, I get philosophically we're speaking now.
Yeah.
There are brick and mortar stores in Bartlesville that provide these services, sell these products. And somebody says, well, the ability to shop online is easier. And some of these websites advertise no sales tax collected.
No sales tax, no shipping. And I think that all of our local businesses would be willing to compete on price and service. What they can't compete on is when there's a tax disadvantage. So when they start off in an 8.5% hole compared to somebody who's online.
8 point what?
It's 8.5 as of December, and it's 8.9 now.
That's a little refresher there. Thank you. But it puts them... Yeah.
So nearly a 9% hole is where our local vendors start out when they're competing against online vendors.
And so...
Online vendor without a brick-and-mortar presence in the state.
That's correct.
That's very true.
Because if you buy from Cabela's, they'll charge you sales tax. Yep. They collect it because they have a presence in the state.
Walmart is the same way. If you buy at walmart.com, they charge sales tax, and the city of Bartlesville receives that sales tax.
But there are a number of other institutions, and I'm just going to refer to one. It's an A to Z firm. I don't want to call it by name.
One of the biggest out there.
And people buy, there is no sales tax collected from Amazon.
Used to, you could. Oh, you said it.
Oh, I said.
Used to, you could just get books. Now you can get whatever you want.
So there's a mechanism that the state of Oklahoma could institute, and it would not be a new tax. It is you and I have worked on a committee for a number of years now about fair tax.
That's right.
The state of Oklahoma, that is Oklahoma Municipal League, has been behind that, and we've been on that committee for some time. I don't want to spend a whole lot of more time on this because
And just to be clear, we're not talking about an internet tax. We're talking about sales tax, and the tax is technically due when you purchase those
goods. You're supposed to remit that.
That's right. The tax is due. It's just who collects it. So right now, rather than putting it on the shoulders of a citizen who probably knows nothing about it, it puts it back on the vendor just like it does in every other transaction and causes them to collect it.
And in fact, the vendors here in town are not paid by the state of Oklahoma to collect the sales tax for the city and for the state.
They get to keep a very small discount. It's about a quarter of what it used to be, and only if they meet certain criteria, including filing in advance.
That's right. So if you don't file in advance, you don't get the discount.
It's very difficult for them. So again, it's a burden on them that isn't having to be met by those who sell their goods online.
So here's an opportunity for the state of Oklahoma to plug a huge hole. And it would not be a new tax, it'd be a fair tax.
No, and the state can address a portion of it. To truly address it, as you know, it requires an act of Congress at the federal level.
But there are other states that are collecting online sales tax.
Yes, and they can force a certain number of the vendors. I don't know how easy it would be to enforce, but they can certainly create a law that forces a certain number of vendors. They redefine Nexus and do things like that.
That's right. And so it would take some legislative footwork.
And I believe there is a bill in the House this year that I hope gets its due. It was a couple of years ago they did something similar, and it didn't even get out of committee.
And because our communities, primarily in the state of Oklahoma, depend upon sales tax, it's crippling us not to receive it.
Streets, police, fire. Without sales tax, we have none of those services to offer the citizens.
And that's true. And there are other efficiencies that could be gained in the state of Oklahoma through different departments. I know I heard Representative Sears speaking of a couple of those. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. Mike, let's talk about
Our sales tax.
Let's talk about our budget. Specifically, we are now in the process of putting together our budget documents. For our directors, we have about 25 departments, and we'll begin the process of working with those departments to put together the budget. What is our budget schedule for this year? That, more specifically, was our conversation.
Right. So, of course, the directors will have everything they need by the end of this month. And then by mid-May is when it really becomes public. That's when the budget will be submitted to the City Council. We'll hold a workshop to discuss it. And then typically by the end of May, we'll publish a budget summary, and that's when the citizens can see it. At the same time we publish that summary, we also publish notice of a public hearing. And so when the citizens, and not often do we get citizens, but we do get some who want to come in and talk about the budget. And then they can come and speak at that public hearing, which is held in early June. If there's not significant citizen input, then typically the budget's adopted that night. If there is and the council wants some more time to think about it, then we've adopted it at a later meeting. But we always have the budget adopted usually by mid-June.
Mike, there's two sides to this budget. There's the enterprise funds, the business side. What are those departments?
Well, primarily what you're talking about there is water, wastewater, and sanitation. We've got some other enterprise funds, but those are the ones that are truly self-supporting. So the fees that you pay support the operation that created those fees.
So you pay your solid waste bill, pay a water bill, you pay a sewer bill. Those monies are used to offset the expense of operating those departments.
Exactly.
And then the other side of that is the sales tax side.
It is, and that's our general operating. So it goes to support basically everything else that people consider a city service. So
and
fire,
the two largest
police.
Departments, you just said it.
That's
those,
it. 50% of the general fund budget is fire and police. And that doesn't even include dispatch, which is an additional, it's held in a fund of its own by state law, so it's not even included in that. So when you put all of that together, we spend more than 50% of the general fund on public safety.
And the reason why that's separate is because of the E911 money.
It is. So by state law, we have to set those aside and keep them in a separate fund. And
the state of Oklahoma enabled counties specifically,
right,
to collect a tax on phones.
Yes.
And the Washington County did that. And we receive that money to, and use it to offset the expense of our dispatch. But do the E911 funds, do they come close to operating
about
that
half
department? They pay about half.
They pay about half. So the other half, of course, comes out of our general fund, which is primarily funded by sales tax. So everything goes back to sales tax and local government.
Yeah, and this is one of those partnerships that we have with the county.
Partnership.
It is a good partnership. It's working well. Been working well for several years. We had some kinks at the beginning, which we anticipated.
We always do.
Some we anticipated,
right,
but some we didn't. But it's worked out well. And Sheriff Silver and Under Sheriff Johnson work well with the police department. Chief Holland is sitting right here next to me, nodding his head. Did you get that on the camera?
I saw that.
Okay, you'll testify to that.
Yeah.
but it is a good partnership. All right, so Mike, back to the budget, kind of this, it's not that I'm not ADD, I don't think.
There's suddenly a lack of eye contact in this room.
back to the subject at hand, that's the budget. So we're moving forward with the document preparation to distribute the packets to the directors. They will receive them at the end of this month. And then begins the process of, we have hearings with each department and the directors.
We do. That is right in the middle of all of this. Usually beginning of May. By the beginning of May, we've typically, you and I have met with every director and gone through their budget requests. Of course, by that point in time, we know how much their requests total and how much we have that we can fund. And so have we ever had it to where we had more money than requests?
No.
I'm guessing it'll be the same this year.
I expect you're probably right.
So at the end of this year, these two will be unhappy with us once again.
Well, they hopefully not quite as unhappy. But
that's true.
But there is a conscious effort on the part of the city council. The policy, this is the largest policy document the city council enacts, and it is their policy. And they control the money.
Absolutely.
As elected officials. And they determine the priorities for that money. And that's why we meet with council. And council gives direction to us as to how the emphasis that they have. And this particular council is very conservative in its spending. It's not, let's spend all we can get all we can. What is, how's that go, Charlie? You get all you can, count all you get, sit on the lid and poison the rest. Whatever. Not sure where that came from.
I'm sure it's a song.
Yeah.
It probably is. Don't leave, Chief Banks. Wait a minute.
Well, and to give our listeners just sort of a quick snapshot and an idea of how big this budget is, the city of Bartlesville has over 40 funds, and a fund is essentially like a little business. It's a self-balancing set of books. We have two authorities that are budgeted as part of this, and then there's over 40 departments that are included in that as well. Total expenditure is about $90 million across all funds. And the general fund itself has over $21 million in expenses and reserves. So it's a lot of money. It's a lot of funds. It is a lot of activities. When we start talking about 40 plus departments, that means those are 40 different activities that the city of Bartlesville is involved in. And of course, each director is over multiple departments. So it's very challenging this time of year to put together your priorities, but it's definitely worth it.
Well, Mike, we appreciate the work that you and Jason and Alicia and your department do to pull this together and to make this happen. And we look forward to accomplishing a goal with the City Council as they set the policy and the direction for the future of our community.
Absolutely.
And I anticipate that this will go well this year.
It's a good time of year for us.
All right. Thank you, Mike. We have with us today, we have Chief John Banks. Chief of the Fire Department. Morning, John.
How you doing?
And then we have Chief Tom Holland, the police chief of the city of Bartlesville. Morning, Chief.
Morning, boss. It's
I know good. That both of you were thrilled to see me this morning. And
well, it's good to be here. We've got 10 minutes left. I feel like the world's a tuxedo, and John and I are a pair of brown shoes.
Just don't fit. Is that what he's saying?
By the way, Charlie, that was George Goebel.
That's right.
I don't know who George Goebel is.
Oh, you're old enough. I want to go back to the ADD comment.
we've left that behind. A couple of things.
Ever since the brown shoe days, yep. Well familiar with that.
I emailed both of you in before the meeting and asked you to be prepared to talk about storm preparedness. And in particular, we're moving into March. Here in just a week, 10 days, we'll be in March and we start the storm season. And I wanted to talk about preparedness. And I want to take this from a couple of different perspectives. Let's talk to the public. I want you all to have a conversation. Tom, you want to start out on storm preparedness? Talk a little bit about that. In fact, the reason I pick on you, you went through a tornado. I don't want you to get lost in that because sure. It was an experience that you went through. You live up by Copan.
Right.
When was that?
2003, our farm got hit and did some damage, destroyed houses around us. And we went immediately down and tried to pull people out and check on them. But yeah, it's a real thing for Oklahoma, obviously, and when you go through one, it's just like they say, it sounds like a freight train. Mm-hmm. The other thing that amazed me on that, Charlie, is it was over quick.
Yes.
It hit, and then I saw blue sky. It moved on. It doesn't stop.
That was a storm that happened, as I recall, about 9 o'clock-ish at night. And once we got done on the air, Richard Quitter and I went up there to kind of survey the damage, and there was plenty to see.
There was, and yep. So we've had that experience. We've had some near misses. One thing that I want to clear up any confusion between a tornado watch and a warning. A watch is an approaching storm, which could spawn a tornado, but a warning means a tornado has either been sighted or it's been detected on radar. And if you get a warning, it's time to be in shelter. You're already supposed to be in a shelter.
And that brings up another good question, Tom. We're talking about storm preparedness. Let me just inject here about there are a number of citizens who are building storm shelters now. I mean, they've become more economical, I think, and there's above ground and in ground or a split between the two. And John, one of the things that I wanted to ask you, Chief Banks, Fire Chief, there are a number of residents here in Bartlesville that are putting in their garages storm shelters, right?
Yeah, I think there's been a big surge of storm shelters in this community. I think probably as a result of the Joplin tornado and the more tornadoes, and so I think there has probably been a upswing in business.
And as they put those in, they put number of them going inside garages. That is, they jackhammer out a concrete garage floor, and they drop these units inside the garage, and that there in the garage is their storm shelter.
Yeah, there's Tom mentioned there's different types. There's some that go actually underground. There's some that bolt to your concrete slab. I'm of the opinion that if you're not underground, you're not totally safe from a tornado, because just from the things I've seen. But I think they all add some protection.
By the way, none of us are selling shelters. No. We're not in the business, but we just know that they come and get a permit from the city of Bartlesville and they're inspected and they're put in. John, what I wanted to ask you, there's kind of a level of expectation that goes along with that from our citizens. How do we know which house has an in-ground or a tornado shelter?
Well, there's the EOC, Washington County Emergency Management, they will GPS. You can get in contact with them. They'll take a GPS reading of that shelter. They keep them on file, so if we would ever have a tornado come through the community, we could access those GPS coordinates to locate those shelters. But Tom mentioned when he had that one in Copan, the neighbors started showing up, and typically in a tornado, your neighbors are actually the first responders. They're probably going to be there before the professionals are. In some instances.
And the reason why is even to get into some of these communities we've seen. into neighborhoods that when there is a tornado, it's difficult. We've seen that the damage and the destruction that they can do.
Yeah, it's when we went to Joplin to assist them, you know, the people that's lived there all their life don't recognize what street they're standing on. I mean, you know, if you take, you know, all the street signs and you just level things off, I mean, it's people that's lived there all their lives will not recognize where they're at.
And if I build a storm shelter that's in the ground, as you just indicated, or above ground, there's the possibility that I could be trapped in that structure.
Yeah, there's a good possibility it could be some time before somebody got to you, for hours, maybe even days. I mean, depending on the situation. So it's important to have, you know, some water, some food, something in that shelter, in case you're there for an extended time. And, you know, and cell phones, you know, everybody thinks about cell phones. A lot of times they won't work. But something to keep in mind on cell phone, typically a text will get out when a cell call won't. We discovered that when we was at Joplin and at Pitcher. You couldn't call out, but you could send a text and it would go. Don't ask me why. I'm not.
Tom Holland is our guru, a technician on that. He'll explain it here shortly.
Yeah.
By the way, I'd add flashlights to that list if you're in there, because it's going to be awful dark.
Yeah.
So there needs to be some thought beforehand, and even rotating through and keeping something to eat, something to drink, a flashlight, maybe I don't know, Charlie, whether radio underground work, I'm not sure.
It generally will, yes.
So on the AM side?
AM side particularly, that would be, I would say, the first choice for that. Of course, we do have FM transmitters around the area, and so try them both, see which one works better for you.
So here, asking the two professionals that work, and your groups both are involved in the Joplin tornado. We were one of the first groups, I think, to volunteer to be there.
We were.
And help with that. And I think even the governor of the state of Missouri recognized the city of Bartlesville and the work that you all did to help in the rescue effort. What would you tell us as we prepare for storm season? What would you say to the citizens that we need to do, forgetting shelters? What should we be preparing with?
Well, if you don't have a storm shelter, I mean, that ideally is to have one. But if you don't have one, you know, take refuge in the smallest space in your residence you have, somewhere in an interior room, maybe a small closet. Put as many walls between you and the storm as you can. Typically a room with no windows in it. You know, if you got football helmets, motorcycle helmets, bicycle helmets, you know, put one on. I mean, because a lot of the trauma injuries we get from a storm is head trauma. So if you've got something to protect yourself, blankets, pillows, anything that you can put around yourself to prevent injury from flying debris.
And in that, in preparedness, is there anything that physically, that besides protecting yourself, any other items that you can think of, chiefs?
Well, not specific to the home, but I'm asked this all the time, particularly in the springtime when these storms come up. Where's the public shelter? We don't have a public shelter. And the only place I'm aware of in Bartlesville for citizens to go to is First Baptist Church downtown and Highland Park Baptist Church on the east side. And I want to quickly add, I've talked to both those churches this morning, they are pet-free facilities. They'll take people. Of course, John will tell you, the worst thing you can do if the funnel is upon you, don't be out in your car driving.
Yeah.
But if you get to those shelters, the other thing, and this is huge, When the storm's brewing, the black clouds are on us, the 911 or dispatch and say, why are the sirens going off? Or do you know the sirens going off? In one storm in particular, 2 years ago, we had 80 phone calls. That's not the time to tie up dispatchers. They're busy. And coupled with that, there's no such thing as an all clear. If the sirens go off and then later they go off again, that means it's getting worse and not better. There is no all clear. The all clear is when you see stars or blue sky.
So, John, you go ahead.
Yeah, like I say, keeping things some stuff to protect yourself. You know, Tom mentioned earlier, flashlight, stuff like that, because you know you could be safe, but you could be trapped. You know, and so you need to be in, you know, prepared to maybe be there for a while.
And if they have questions, and they can call.
Yeah, they can call the fire station, 338-4091, Central Fire Station. They can call that number, and we'll do the best we can to answer their questions.
If they have civic organizations that want to be addressed, either y'all would be available to
come and
talk.
And Tom, I know his department's been involved too. You know, we've been in, and the ELC has been involved in going into all the schools and identifying safe areas in those places. So, if they want us to come and look, we will. Give us a call. We'll come check their house out.
Gentlemen, thank you for being a part of this today, and God bless the city of Bartlesville. Thank you, Charlie.
Dignity, compassion, excellence. Stump Funeral Home and Crematory, Bartlesville, Nowata, Barnstall. This is KWON Bartlesville and K22 7CQ Bartlesville.